This is Limitless Possibility. I'm Luc-Olivier Dumablet.
And I'm Yannick Magnat.
And what's our topic this week, Yannick?
Lua and game development with love.
Ooh. And do you have any follow-up before we start?
Well, before we get to the follow-up, I should explain why my sound quality is a little crappy this week. I am currently out on the street corner in Yokohama, Japan, on the Wi-Fi across the street. So the sound quality isn't great because I'm on my phone, and the Wi-Fi could be spotty, and there are cars and people going by me all the time. So please be advised that this episode's audio might be a little bit messy. We apologize for that, but we hope it'll be a good show anyway. Follow up. Actually, I think you should go first with the follow up in case what I have overrides your stuff.
Good. So I'll start. My first follow up is from The Loop Inside, and it's related to the developer iTunes Connect snafu that happened a couple of weeks ago. So as some of you may know, there was maybe a 1 hour period that people wanted to log into their iTunes Connect account and realized that they were not logged into their own account, but onto somebody else's account. So that was pretty nice. And for at least an hour on that January 30th day, I was working for BlackBerry.
Good job.
Yeah.
You're keeping the Canadian economy alive.
Exactly. Next follow-up is related to my first episode, which was complaining about iOS 8 bugs. And this week, Mark Gurman kind of teased that we might see a public beta on iOS 8.3 and on iOS 9 this summer.
Yeah.
So the rumor says that Apple is planning to do a public beta program like they did with Yosemite last year. But the public beta for iOS 8.3 or iOS 9 should be shorter, aka they will apparently be limited to 1,000 people compared to the 1 million people that was for OS X Yosemite.
Oh, was there actually a person limit for Yosemite? I thought it was unlimited.
No, it was 1 million people.
Really? Limit. And did they reach the limit?
I don't honestly don't know.
Huh.
And also in that rumor, Mark Gurman is saying that we might also see an iOS 8.4 before iOS 9, which should be codenamed Coper, and that might be related to the new streaming services that Apple is working on.
Well, it would make sense that like 8.3 is the Apple Watch build and 8.4 is mystery build before 9.
They haven't released 8.2, which is the Apple Watch build.
Wait, shit, you're right. I forgot.
Yeah, funny enough, right now you can download iOS 8.2 beta 5, if I recall correctly, or maybe beta 4, which is for WatchKit. And you can download 8.3 with Swift 1.2 support.
Right. Swift, I forgot about that. We should also add that iOS 9 is rumored to be basically what we've all been dreaming about, which is basically the Snow Leopard of iOS, where there are quote-unquote no new features, and it's basically a maintenance upgrade to make sure that the stuff that they introduced last year, which didn't work, now works. Fingers crossed on that point.
Finger crossed, because I do hope that the next release will be a Snow Leopard release, in a way. Also, a follow-up from the last episode where I spoke about CarPlay, and in the latest iOS 8.3 beta, we found out that there's support for wireless CarPlay. As I mentioned in the last episode, CarPlay is only tethered using USB, so it should be working now with Bluetooth, which is kind of interesting that they found a way to use Bluetooth to send your iPhone screen information to your car.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't do the Wi-Fi thing, because like it seems like more and more cars are doing the Wi-Fi Direct thing.
Or maybe it's Wi-Fi, but the rumors and what people found out by reverse engineering the iOS 8.3 build was speaking about Bluetooth.
Interesting. Well, it might just be there like for if they tested both technologies and just wanted to, like, have them both in the OS so that they can continue testing as Bluetooth evolves going forward. But it's interesting.
And the other big follow-up related to car stuff and Apple is... this week we kind of got tons of rumors and tons of, like, smoke mentioning that Apple is working on a car.
And to be fair, if you've been following Apple for a really, really long time, hang on, I'm going to move, I'm going to get run over by a truck. speaking of cars, if you've been following Apple for a very, very long time, like, there have been rumors going back at least 10, 15 years that they were partnering up with Volkswagen on a car project.
Oh, really? I didn't remember that.
Yeah, this was, like, around the time the iPod came out. So it's not entirely surprising to me. I just thought, like, the rumors completely died because, like, they stopped working on it or realized that they would rather be working on glass screens you can touch. But it's actually nice to hear that that project is still going on somehow. What worries me, actually, is there are all these rumors about Apple doing this electric car project, but, like, you'd think that people on the campus would, like, notice this giant room with cars and mechanics in it or something. And I don't know. Doesn't seem like anyone really seems to have noticed that.
Yeah, exactly. But the way that people notice something is by Apple poaching Tesla or battery tech companies' employees.
Right.
And the big news related to that is A123 System is suing Apple for unfair competition because they poached their employees.
Unfair competition in an industry they haven't even confirmed they're actually in yet.
Yep. Also, in the... Let's put it in the clam shoulder stuff. Like, the ex-GM CEO says that building cars may not be worth it to Apple.
Right. Because, like, PC guys are never going to come in and take the phone industry.
Exactly. It's like... Like, and funny enough, I have a picture of the guy in front of me, and the guy looks like Steve Ballmer.
Nice.
So it's really funny that the GM ex-CEO is saying, like, oh, Apple, go away. You're never making a car. And Steve Ballmer was saying, like, oh, Apple, go away. You're never making a cell phone. And yes, we know what happened to Steve Ballmer.
Yeah, he bought the Clippers. Actually, is it the Clippers? I forgot what the name of the team is called, but Basketballmer.
Yeah.
I will never forget that fucking Bloomberg Business Week cover. Bloomberg Business Week, I don't know what the deal is with them, but, like, I think they drink a little too much on the job because their magazine covers are nuts every goddamn week.
Speaking of Bloomberg,
uh-oh.
Their latest rumor about the Apple car is they're saying that Apple is planning to launch this electric car by the year 2020.
So maybe your estimate that this year would be the year of CarPlay was a little bit ahead of time.
Maybe. We'll see in the next 5 years. But maybe this year they concentrate on CarPlay. And then when they have CarPlay working, it can work for the car around CarPlay. So we'll see. Last follow-up in my list is from Darren Fremble. So today, John Gruber wrote a long post regarding the Apple Watch, and there was a lot of news and rumors about the price of the Apple Watch edition. Yeah. And Louis Mantilla designed a big chart, a big table populating which combination of Apple Watch collection and band combination that is currently available on the website. And there's long story short, his article is speaking about the price of the Apple Edition watch and the price of all of the 3 collection watch and what the bands indicate us for pricing purposes. So it might be 2 separate those. And that's it for follow-up for me.
Okay. You covered most of the stuff I had. I guess I should try to keep this short because, like, I'm going to be standing on this corner for a long time if I have too much follow-up. I should just say that... I went to Japan Amusement Expo last week in Makuhari Messe, And I got to meet the fantastic Aiko Oi, which is a progressive rock composer who has done music for Bimani Games and has composed the song Limitless Possibility, which this podcast is named after. So that was really, really cool. She's a really great person, and I'm really glad to have met her. And that is my follow-up for this week. It's bragging about meeting a composer you've never heard of, which is typical for me because, I mean, like, that's everything I talk about on this show, basically. Yeah. So we should just get into the main topic. So I was really shady with you the whole time, trying to not tell you what my topic would be because I wanted to surprise you out of nowhere with my topic. And that topic is Lua and game development with love. So the first thing is, yeah, apparently I'm developing a game now. Question mark.
Wow.
I'm not allowed to talk too much about it because it's not my project. I'm collaborating on a friend's project because she needed, basically she wanted to program it herself, but then she realized, like, I don't know anything about programming. I'm going to take forever to do my game if I do that. So let's bring you on to do the game and help with development. So I'm working on that. And basically I want to talk about the decisions I made to choose Love as my game development framework, and also my thoughts on both the framework and Lua, which is the language it is based on. But first I should get into some of my like game development history, because apparently I have one. So back in the old days on the classic Mac, you don't hear about gaming in classic Mac a lot, but whatever. When I was a little kid, like 5 years old, I modded classic Mac games like crazy. The great thing about classic Mac was the resource fork. If you're not familiar with the resource fork, files back in the day had the data fork, which contained the actual data of the file, and the resource fork, which contained like images or sounds or even like stuff you would find in NIMS these days. You would find definitions of windows and stuff in those resource forks. And the great thing was that ResEdit existed, and ResEdit was a utility that Apple made, which let you open the resource fork of various files and change the content of them. Which is funny because that made Mac games a lot more hackable than Windows games. And the parallel, of course, that I'm going to draw, even though it is not exactly the same, is that once Apple adopted Objective-C, well, the nature of the Objective-C runtime made Mac and iOS software infinitely more hackable than stuff on other platforms as well, because you could dynamically change stuff at runtime. So that's basically how I got my start in hacking stuff on the Mac or on iOS. And mostly what I did is I changed the sprites. I changed characters. Like, there was this game called Bub and Bob, which was a clone of Taito's Bubble Bobble for the Mac. And I basically replaced all the sprites with Mega Man sprites, which was weird.
Why not?
Why not? Then I'm going to talk about something that's pertinent to your job, actually. At some point, I got a demo for Real Basic.
Wow, you honestly did that?
Yes, I did. Well, Real Basic used to actually be pretty good in the OS 8 days. It just never really like evolved from that point. I got a Real Basic demo, and I tried to hack together a Pokemon fan game because Pokemon was huge back in the day. Well, it's still huge, but it was more important to me at that time. And my fan game was nuts. It was a little bit too ambitious as a first project because I was also doing the whole thing with QuickTime VR. Do you know what QuickTime VR is?
Nope, I don't know.
Okay, so QuickTime VR, 90s kids will remember this.
I'm a 90s kid.
You know like how in Street View you can do like the panorama thing in your browser and turn around with all of that?
Yep.
Yeah, well basically QuickTime VR was that, except in 1993.
Wow.
And QuickTime has been able to do this since a long, long time ago. And I guess now it doesn't exist anymore because of stuff like HTML5 and whatever making it possible. I mean, it's a pain in the ass to code if you want to do it in HTML5, but I guess it can be done. And so my Pokemon fan game was entirely worlds that were in QTVR that I had made in Photoshop and then stitched together using a panorama stitcher. I don't remember the name of the app. And then you could walk from room to room by like clicking on zones in the QTVR. And it was really, really ambitious, except I didn't know how to code in Real Basic and there were no real resources available. So I quickly gave up on that. A little later, well, actually a lot later, Time Splitters 2 came out on the GameCube, and Time Splitters 2 was developed by the people who did GoldenEye for the N64, which is a pretty popular and legendary first-person shooter as far as the history of first-person shooters are. Personally, I'm not a fan of GoldenEye, sorry. But Time Splitters 2 was dope, and it had a really, really, really good map editor, and that was the best feature. We rented it like several times. And the entire time I would be in the map editor creating maps and doing stuff. So that's sort of like quasi game development. The map editor was really good for something on a console, but it didn't really compare to stuff like Half-Life modding or Half-Life 2 modding, which is basically how the entire company, Valve, basically does games now, is modding the engine. And more recently, this is like while we were in college, I had a period when I was really, really into shoot 'em ups. Well, I still am, but I mean, I wanted to try to make shoot 'em ups. So I made three different vertical shmup engines, believe it or not. Once in Cocos 2D in Python, once in Cocos 2D on the iPhone, because I wanted to see how easy it was to translate Cocos 2D Python code to iPhone, and one straight to Canvas in the browser, which worked with touch events. Which I worked on with our mutual friend Shannon, which was interesting.
Yeah, I remember that one of those projects was with Shannon, but I didn't remember which one.
Yeah, and I never actually released them publicly. And the primary issue is I could build the engine, but I didn't have like enough. I wasn't creative enough to actually do the art or, more importantly, bullet patterns for the enemies. So I sort of gave up on that. I would have liked, eventually, there is this, there's an engine called Toho Danmakufu, which is basically a copy of the engine for the Toho games, which is a series of shoot 'em ups, that allows fan games. And I wanted to take that engine, which is only available on Windows, and try to translate it into JavaScript so that those games would be playable in the browser, but I just never had the time to go ahead and do it. So that is basically my game development history up until entering this project. I guess I should sort of mention what this project is, and I'm probably going to get slapped in the face for saying this, but whatever.
I guess you can just try to stay vague.
I'm going to stay vague. It's sort of a merge between the visual novel genre, which is basically interactive fiction with visuals, and the overhead view of a role-playing game. So, like, imagine moving around in Pokemon from the top-down view, but instead of having a battle system or anything, you're going around talking to people. So it's not an incredibly complex thing to develop. And I think I'm going to stop talking about it there, because that is about all you need to know for the actual contents of this show. And I don't want to make my partner angry.
That's a good idea.
So when we were entering this project, my friend had started trying to learn, I believe it was Pygame, which is a Python game engine. But she never actually wrote any code for the game, especially she had like Hello World projects and basic tutorials running, but that's about it. So I asked her, because like Pygame, I mean, it's technically cross-platform, but packaging Pygame games to be transferable from one platform to the other is sort of a pain in the ass. And there's a lot of command line stuff involved and all that stuff. I want it to be really, really simple for cross-platform development, because I'm on a Mac, she's on a PC. So I basically asked her, is it okay if I choose a different game engine, well, game framework that I can build this project on? And I'm going to go through the selection criteria for this, and then we'll go through why I chose it. So
can I interrupt you for a sec?
Yeah.
Okay, good. The big concern I have right now is, which platform do you need to support?
PC and Mac.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, actually, technically, Mac is only there because I need to be able to develop on something. But
but
that is the thing.
PCs.
PCs. So first off, we need a permissive license. It's unclear how the project is going to be released. We don't know if it's going to be commercial. We don't know if it's going to be free yet. So to try and keep as many of those avenues open as possible, we're going to have a permissive license that lets us be as safe as possible. Next up, easily deployable on multiple platforms. We've been over this. OS X, Windows, both are really useful. It needs to be easy for me to share debug builds. Next up, we need an engine that is 2D focused. Too many people I know have spent time working with Unity, trying to get 2D games working, and it was a pain in the ass for them, and it didn't do a really great job because it's a 3D engine, and they sort of glued the 2D stuff onto there. Then lightweight, lightweight because like no heavy ID because our laptops can't handle them. That's sort of also a pain. I love editing in Vim, so I would love to just use Vim to edit my code instead of relying on an IDE. And luckily, the indie game boom recently has sprouted many, many engines so that these criteria can be met by a handful of them. And I chose Love, which is the Lua-based 2D game engine, because it fit these values the best. So Lua is a language. I should talk about it a bit. It feels like JavaScript was trying, what JavaScript was trying to be, as opposed to the monstrosity JavaScript became.
Please,
which means that like all the crazy stuff that JavaScript does is not there in Lua for the most part. Apparently, like the most controversial thing I would guess is that every number is a float. Otherwise, that is about the only weird thing I can think of that Lua does that would be controversial in any way. So let's get into the good things about Love. Before that, I forgot.
You just said it. I just clicked, but you just said that every number are floats.
Yes.
And we all know that float calculation is a pain in the ass. In a bit, like if you want to do precise calculation, like float point calculation is kind
but
of.
But we're not doing precise calculations.
Okay,
but like some point for all I care, like as long as it looks good, I don't care. It's not like scientific programming or anything like that. It's fine.
Yeah, but I know that in some games it is kind of important to have precise calculations. So
I would think it's more important in 3D games than it is in 2D games.
Oh. Yeah.
Because like in 2D games, as long as I'm snapping to the pixel grid, like I don't care about the floating point that much. Or at least for now. Let's just say that. So I should point out also the other controversial thing about Lua, the language, is that it has prototypical inheritance, which is another thing that a lot of people dislike about JavaScript. I don't think that it's necessarily a thing to dislike about JavaScript. I think it's something that is different about JavaScript and that people don't appreciate because they're happy with things they're familiar with. But Lua is prototypical inheritance. If you don't know what that means, in quote-unquote normal programming languages, you can define a class, which then you can instantiate that class to have an object of a specific type. So let's say I'm going to create a cat type. And then if I instantiate a cat, all the cats will behave exactly the same, unless there are subclasses of a cat. So you can say, okay, well, this cat is a wild cat, and it has different traits. With prototypical inheritance, there is basically one type of object. It's an object, and you give properties to that object. And then when you want to create similar objects, you clone that object. And then you can modify the properties on the cloned object to modify behavior specific to that object, which is a very different way of thinking about it. But for many things, it actually makes a lot of sense to do things that way. And it allows for more flexibility without having a crazy class hierarchy where everything is a singleton. So that is another thing that might be controversial about Lua that slipped my mind for a second. But yeah, so Lua, it looks like JavaScript a lot, minus the curly brackets. The syntax otherwise, if you change the curly brackets to like the ending bracket to be end instead. It's basically the same. And that's what Lua is like. So now let's get into the good stuff about the love framework. Good stuff, Zlib license. Zlib license means do whatever the hell you want. Go nuts. So that is fun. Cross-platform.
It is better than the open source or free licenses that you so
like. Yeah, like we've been talking about with JSON last
time. Yeah, exactly. And we all know that you love those kinds of licenses.
Yes. On the cross-platform front, there are executables on their website that you can go download for Mac, PC, and Linux. And technically, there are more unofficial ports in the works for mobile platforms. Right now, I believe there is a version for Android and a version for iOS. The problem is the framework is very much tuned for mouse and keyboard interaction, so I'm not sure how well it would work out on mobile. I guess with some tweaking of the framework, it could actually be viable on mobile. But like, I wouldn't want to make a mobile game with this framework by any means.
So you're not planning.
No, so you're go
not,
ahead.
So you're not planning to later on do a mobile version of this game.
Well, it's too early to say, really. But if I were to do it, I wouldn't do it in love.
Okay, because in a way,
I wouldn't port it directly.
Oh, okay, because in a way, you're kind of like closing those doors already.
Right, but at the same time, like those kinds of games just don't work very well with mobile touch controls. So I would feel bad doing it that way. The game would have to be tweaked significantly for it to actually make sense or at least be comfortable to play. So yeah.
And at that point, it will be easier to just like migrate like to a new framework.
Maybe like a mobile spinoff or something, but again, we're too early. We're trying to get the first game done, not the second.
Okay.
Game packaging is really simple. So this was the thing that worried me a lot, because Pygame is sort of a mess. You have this crazy folder of files and stuff, and there's no real easy way to package games and send them to people on other platforms without giving them basically like, go to the command line and run these three things and hope they have Python installed. Like, it's a mess. It's really a mess. The great thing about Love, so they have this runtime executable. You can go to the website, download it, and you can drag a .love file onto it. Your .love file can contain your entire game if you want, and you just drag it on, and the game runs, and it's great, and it works on every platform, and it's consistent, and it's great. We love it. But there's a bonus to that, which is, what if you want to actually ship like a .exe or a .app that your fans can go download on your website? Well, that's cool, because all you have to do is append the .love file to the love executable. So the love.exe, you just take every byte of your .love file and jam it at the end of the thing, and then congratulations, when you start running the app, it will automatically launch your game, and everything will be there, and you have no other work to do. So that is brilliant, and the great thing about this is it actually works, so you can just append it on OS X, and you know it will work on Windows, which is really, really great. So this is actually really useful, because it means, for debugging purposes, I can just send one file to my friend and she can drag it onto her app and test the same thing I'm testing, and it works great. And internally, those .love files are just zips that are renamed to .love, so that is great too. We were talking about lightweight frameworks earlier. So this is basically a wrapper over SDL, which shouldn't be too surprising to many people. It shims everything that's platform-specific you would worry about, and it offers basic APIs for multimedia and input, and then gets out of your way. It takes great pride in being a slim framework, making it perfect for game prototyping and game jams. Asterisk. We will get back to this, because I sort of disagree in certain ways. Now let's get into the bad points. Debugging is sort of absent from the framework, which is weird. Anytime your app throws an error, you get a blue screen of death. Not a blue screen of death that takes down your entire machine, but inside the runtime window, the entire thing goes blue and you have a stack trace, basically, of where your app crashed. This is useful because it helps you find those crashes really, really fast. The problem is like debug logging and all that stuff is non-existent. It's really weird. I expected, at the very least, a debug log, sort of like in games like Doom or Quake, where you press tilde and you have like this debug log that pops up. None of that in Love, which is really disappointing.
So you need to implement it yourself if you want it.
Well, you can do that, or you can rely on third-party libraries. So there's one called Potato, which puts basically a debug log in the upper left corner of your app, which is useful. But my personal favorite is called Lovebird. And the reason I love Lovebird so much, aside from the name, is that it just puts a debug log on localhost colon 8000, and you just go to that in your browser, and you can see your debug log. But you can also have the entire Lua interpreter right there available to you, so you can just type in it. So it's very much like the JavaScript inspector for your browser, except it's for your live game, which is really, really nice.
Oh, that's pretty neat.
Yes, there are some things that are sort of a pain in the ass because variables, you can declare variables as either local variables or global variables, and sometimes accessing certain variables is tricky via the interpreter. Like, you can't just say, well, get me into the scope of this function and then let me call stuff from within that scope. It's not that simple. You're the global scope, so you have to always sort of shoehorn stuff into the global scope somehow, which is not optimal, but it works, which is better than having no debugging at all.
Yeah, because I guess you cannot, the way you explain it right now is you cannot stop at in a certain function and say like,
oh, right, you can't like set a breakpoint and then say, okay, I want to print the value of this variable with this name. It doesn't work that way. Your interpreter is limited to global scope. So you have to have a way to access all those variables, which is sort of an issue. One other thing that I have yet to test but exists is there is a module which will hot reload your code while it's running. So you can just edit code in the editor, tap a button, and it will reload your game thing. I'm not sure how all that works in practice, which is why I haven't really done it. But it sounds interesting, to say the least. The next thing I want to talk about is scene support, which is basically my biggest issue with this framework. Cocos2D has this thing called scenes, and I believe, what's it called? SpriteKit on iOS also has scenes. And scenes basically allow you as a developer to say, okay, I'm going to have a menu scene, sort of like in storyboards on iOS, where you have like these various view controllers that you transition between. Basically, scenes would be the equivalent of that. So you would have a menu scene and then a game scene. And if you have like a loading screen, you would have a loading screen scene. And in Cocos, you can just say like, okay, main game context, I'm changing scenes now. Please transition between scene A and scene B with this transition type. And it would automatically do that for you, which is really, really useful and saves a lot of time. Love doesn't have this, which is weird. You have to transition between... Oh, go ahead.
I was about to say that it makes your code design all a bit worse, too. Because it like, for example, for storyboards or the scenes, it makes code usability easier.
Right. Well, I don't want to talk too much about code architecture. I do have like a demo version of the game that I have running on my laptop, which actually does a lot better than I thought, even with these constraints. But the thing that kills it for me is really the transitions, because that is the part that is hard to implement. You have to basically like code all your transitions between scenes yourself and manage when things start and end in the life cycle. And I don't know, like, the thing about the framework is they say it's really great for game prototyping, and I sort of agree in the way that if you're just prototyping the game part of the game, it's fine. But if you're trying to do stuff like menus and whatever, like, transitioning between a menu and a game is actually surprisingly hard, unless you want, like, a hard, like, no transition, basically. It just pops up and changes, you know? Right. What was really cool about scenes is it let you really split games various mechanics into separate modules with their own draw and update loops, which meant that instead of having, because Love basically, I don't know, some of our developer listeners, which are probably the only people listening now, to be honest, might be familiar with Sinatra, which is a web development framework on Ruby. And the thing about Sinatra is it's really simple. You just implement a couple methods and you've got basically this server with a website running. And Love is basically the equivalent of that framework for gaming, which is why I was so drawn to it. But like a lot of the demos just are single file demos that don't scale very well to the complexities of a real game, you know? And that's sort of what's disappointing. Now, it looks like some of my notes didn't actually sync over to my iPad, which means I have to put the iPad away and improvise now, which is always fun. Another good thing about Love is its documentation, but it's also a bad thing, which I will get to as soon as I finish folding up this goddamn iPad case. There we go. Love has this great wiki at love2d.org. You can go read documentation, which is really, really well written for all of the frameworks functions, which is really great. They do an extremely good job of telling you when a function was introduced and when it was phased out. So if you're working on a specific version of the Love framework, you will be aware of what you can and can't do, which is really great. The bad thing is there's this tutorial section, and the tutorial section is very badly maintained, and a lot of it is from third parties. It's not from the Love developers themselves. So if you go to the tutorial section, some of the links, you click on them and you get a blank page. There was previously a tutorial there, and then they just sort of nuked it for no apparent reason, which is strange. A lot of the tutorials assume prior programming knowledge, and this is something that I've sort of been debating about recently because of what we've been hearing in the game industry about, like, widening who can be a game developer. And obviously, I think that, like, game development should be accessible to as many people as possible. But so much of the documentation out there for these game development frameworks assume that you're familiar with at least one programming language and programming terminology, which is not always true, especially when getting into game programming. There's a lot of the stuff there that is out of date, or using old versions of the framework that you're like, okay, is this still going to work? Shrug. So that's not very useful.
A little bit sad that the documentation is this way, because the feeling that I have right now when you're saying that is that the product by itself is not that long. It might not be supported for a while. Like, if they're having issues supporting the documentation, I can imagine what will happen in a couple of months or a couple of years with that product.
Well, the thing is, like, the documentation, the actual API documentation is very, very well maintained. It's just when you get into the tutorials type stuff, which is not made by the Love developers themselves, that's when stuff starts getting a little rough on the edges. Like, one of the things that was confusing me at first was, like I mentioned, there's no scene support in this. So my first question was, okay, well, if there's no scenes, what is the best, the most optimal way to actually structure my code so that my game mechanics can live separately, but they can still interact with each other in a great way? And there is basically none of that answered on the wiki, which is disappointing. You can go to GitHub, you can search for games that were developed with Love, and you can find a couple examples of them, and that is useful, but many people won't think of that, or if they're starting to develop games for the first time, or starting to develop, period, for the first time with this framework, they're not going to think of going to GitHub and looking up source code for a game, plus it's probably not going to mean anything to them yet, because they're new to this. So I think, like, if you're trying to be the game framework for inclusive game development, I think that the documentation could use a lot more work with regards to welcoming first-time developers, as opposed to just like, hey, you know how to develop things, and probably can do a good enough job of bullshitting game design into this framework. Here's some basic documentation to get you started on how to draw shapes. Like, developers who have been doing this for a long time aren't going to need that kind of documentation anyway. The people who need the documentation are people who are really first-time developers, and there's just nothing for them, and I feel sort of bad.
Yeah, I get that, but the feeling is, like, the love developers are not making those tutorials, and maybe they should.
They should. At least in my eyes, they should. It's unclear to me, like, how they're funding this. I believe it's just, like, an open source project that they're doing in their spare time. So that would explain, like, why people don't care about documentation. Because, honestly, in most open source projects, that is where the suffering is. It's always in the documentation, or it's, like, I've worked on documentation for, very briefly, the Camino browser on OS X. And I can tell you that that is basically the thing that they need help with the most in open source projects. Usually it's documentation. What else was I going to say? Right, so I should talk a little bit about the demo app I have running on this framework before I go to charge my phone battery and do other stuff. I basically have a basic version of a game engine running in Love, which is really great. As I said earlier, this is basically like a tile-based overhead view RPG-ish thing. Think of Pokemon, basically. You see the view from the top down. You can move up, down, left, right. You can hold shift to run, which is useful because during testing, you don't want to wait for your guy to walk all the time. You have an action button, which you can use on items. Items pop up the recently written dialogue system now instead of just printing to the debug log, which is actually nice. And the dialogue actually like has a typewriter effect where the letters come out one by one instead of doing like all one block of text at a time, which is really great. And I guess technically my next thing to develop is dialogue trees where you have choices in conversations that you can choose from. But I was surprised at how well it went to actually program everything. The code base is very, very small for my app, which I enjoy because if I have to look at another 1,000-line source file, I'm going to kill myself. Okay. And are you still there?
Of course.
Okay, there was just silence and I was worried.
While you're having fun with the strange stuff happening besides you, I'm like listening and be like, huh, there's somebody walking and whatever.
Well, earlier I was really worried because there were like three cops right next to me.
And I'm sure they were pointing at you like, oh, that's the guy we're looking for.
Yeah, basically. I should go a little bit into like how I structured my game without scenes, because that might actually be interesting for developers. So basically what I've done is the game is so basic right now that there are only like two different things happening. There's the overhead view itself, which I have in an overhead view.lua file. And I decided to create basically these one-off objects that have their own draw and update loops. Basically, they implement their own versions of the callbacks that Love would be calling on your game object, if that makes any sense. And basically what I do is I have a stack in my game's main Lua file, which basically says, okay, here is the stack of game layers that exists. And I just do it very similarly to Photoshop. I go, okay, draw the bottom layer first, go up and up and up. And you can say, at any layer, you can say, okay, cut off inputs for any of the layers below this. So if you have like a pause layer, you can say, okay, I'm the pause screen. I'm going to black out the entire screen and inputs don't go to the layers under me. And you can also say like, okay, I'm going to stop allowing layers under me to draw and update because it's unnecessary because I cover the entire screen. So to not waste resources, you can just say, okay, cut off all the rest. So that's how I coded it. The entire thing has support for basically transparency across things. So like layers are truly layers. They're not just like scenes displayed one on top of the other, which is a little more flexible than scenes would have been anyway. Because, like, in my case now, I can have a dialogue layer on top of the overhead view. And I can do it so that, like, you can continue to see animations in the background on the map while... man, this kid is really annoying and crying. I'm sorry. I can't think like this.
Small Pontus is here, but it's so funny that every time there's some strange noise, you're like making a pause and explaining the sounds. Like, oh, that's funny.
Right now, there is a baby. There is a little kid across the street which is crying, and his parents are trying to cheer him up, and it's very distracting.
Oh my god! You know what? Maybe we should record another episode before you leave, and it's like you explaining what's happening around you. Like you're sitting in a park, and like, there's wind. Oh, there's a family walking in front of me, and they're looking strange at me.
Unfortunately, I don't have the time to record that. So, where the hell was I? Yeah, so that's right. So, basically, I'm doing this new layer architecture, and it's working out very well. What I'm worried about is right now, you can only have, like, one dialogue layer. So, what I can't do is have, like... menu layer that also reuses the dialogue layer in itself, because if I'm using the dialogue layer under the menu, like, I would be displaying the same layer twice and it would break stuff significantly. So that is a problem. And of course, I could clone the dialogue layer because it's prototypical inheritance, right? But that sounds like a mess that would destroy things, and I don't want to do that. So far, I'm actually very, very happy with how well the development has gone. My friend is still sort of figuring things out as far as, like, how she wants the game design to be. So right now, like, there are no assets in my game. Well, there are assets, but they're, like, assets I made up. Like, they're 32 by 32 pixel grid units that I made in Acorn, and basically just are a solid color and Helvetica text saying, like, what the type of the object is.
Oh, that's nice. Like,
so like grass, which is green and has Helvetica grass in the middle of it. It's like, thank you, this is very useful. Or like the direction the player is pointing, instead of having a triangle that points in the right direction like a smart person would, I just made a circle that says up, down, left, right, because I'm lazy.
Oh my god, it would have been so better with the triangle, but whatever.
Yeah, but that requires actual effort. And there's going to be, like, real, actual good art at some point. It's just not here yet. So, yeah, basically right now, we're like, this is a side project. We're taking it really easy. I have no idea when this is going to come out. So don't expect it anytime soon. But, like, it's really interesting to, like, try this game framework. And, like, really, like, I've never tried to make a game seriously before. Like, everything I said was really just, like, dicking around for fun. And I'm going to get run over by a truck again. And these streets are very, 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 like, they're not wide at all. So, yeah, it's really interesting to try these new technologies out. It was my first time with Lua, I think. Yeah, that sounds right. First time with Lua, and I really like the language. I really would love it if... the web dumps JavaScript and use Lua instead, but that's not going to happen. It would just be like a saner experience for everyone if they did that, though. And Love Framework, like, documentation issues aside and lack of scene support aside, I can manage without those things, and the advantages outweigh the disadvantages significantly for me. Like, being able to mail someone a zip file and have them drag it on an executable and have it be the same on all platforms. Like, you don't know how great that is unless you've actually tried to make cross-platform software any other way before. Like, that sounds brilliant, and I'm looking forward to making better use of it. And honestly, it's making me, like, want to try game development stuff more going forward. Obviously, I don't think I'm going to be doing anything like that for, like, business stuff, because I don't think it's a viable use of my time. The App Store is such a mess when it comes to, like, apps and games these days that I'm not sure I could like make a business selling a game on the App Store, especially like with all the art that's involved, and my lack of being able to make any of that art is sort of a limiting factor. I would have to pay someone to do all the art for me, and that gets very, very costly. And then you think about, well, how do I recoup those costs? And then you say, well, it's the App Store, you might not, and it's a big risk. So, but like as a hobby on the side, I really like this framework and I want to use it more going forward, or something like it going forward, maybe on mobile. So we'll see. And I'm looking forward to spending the rest of the year like working on this thing. So do you have any questions?
I do. And I would like to, like, we talked about your main project in a couple of episodes ago. And I would like to
EOS,
know
how, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I would like to know how much that side project and learning a new language and learning a little bit about game programming affected your main project.
It didn't.
Okay.
Like, to be honest, like, it was, I spent time working on this side project the nights for the 2 weeks leading up to my trip, and I've worked on it one night during this trip, and that is about the extent to which I have played around with this. Obviously, we've been talking a lot, my partner and I, about, like, how we want the game to be, because it's important for me to know how she expects things to be so that I don't code things in a way that contradicts that, and then I have to rewrite everything, right? So we've been doing a lot of talking, but actual development, I've only been doing this like nighttime for like 2 weeks leading up to the trip. It wasn't like a huge time investment. And really, it's like you need side projects and not burn out on the thing you're working. I know this all too well.
No, that's right, that's right. But it wasn't clear to me if it was taking that much time on your main project or not.
No, this side project has not taken any time away from EOS.
Okay.
If that is the question. Which is like, why haven't you shipped yet? And yes, I know. Coming soon.
Yeah, that's a little bit my... It is my recurring theme when we speak
together, yeah,
offline about EOS.
It's, like, it's really coming soon, though.
Yeah?
But yeah.
Like... It's funny because these days I'm working a lot in test flight at work, and we were like preparing a new beta. I was like, EOS expired.
Yes, Yannick, it did.
Maybe it might be a good idea to push another
I'm
beta.
Legally not supposed to be working in Japan while I'm here.
I know.
I am not working.
I know.
Okay. Anything else about Lua or the framework or game development in general?
I don't have a question about it, because I'm not saying that it's... And what I'm trying to say here is that game programming never interested me that much.
Huh.
Like, I'm not saying it's something that I hate. I'm just like, it's not something that it's interesting me. Like... I remember when I was in college and when I was trying to learn programming as a whole, I was mostly focusing on mobile technologies or a little bit of web stuff, but yeah, I still need to work on web stuff too. But like, it never came to do game stuff, and I know that I decided to go in programming courses not because of games, like, it never was a factor for me to just say, like, oh, I'm a big fan of video games as a whole, and I want to go make them.
Right. Well, the thing that always, like, the reason I've never really explored game programming, like I've mentioned earlier, is, like, I can't do the art at all. And that is, like, if you can't do the art for a game, well, what the hell are you going to look at, right? I mean, like, you can make geometric shape games, but, like, most of them aren't that great. Video Ball, though, looks awesome, and I can't wait for that to come out.
Yeah, but that's if you want to make a game on your own.
Right, well, that's the thing. So now I have someone who is actually a very good artist, who is my partner. So that helps. And she's going to be doing all the art, and I'm doing the programming, and we're basically, like, just doing what we're best at. And I think that kind of combination is really, really interesting. But, like, so from a business perspective, like, I'm not sure how I would handle that if this were to be like a commercial project that I would be selling on the App Store, you know? Like, this is just like, well, we're two friends, we're helping each other out, and we're going to talk about like how we're going to release this when we're closer to release. But we're not thinking about it as a business, we're thinking about it as a fun hobby. And that is really interesting. And on your point about, like, you were interested in mobile and to some extent web, like, the thing is, I've been doing web since like kindergarten. I don't know. Like, so like web stuff, I've been around the block a couple times. Like, I know how to do it. So that exploring web more doesn't really stimulate me that much. Like, I could learn Node and be like a cool kid, but I don't really want to learn Node.
No, sorry. And like you said a couple of minutes ago, like, you want something to vent. It's a good idea to have something to vent.
Right. So, like, web I've done already. Mobile is my day job, so I'm not going to be spending more time as a side project doing more mobile stuff. Because, like, unless it's like, here's this dumb app I'm going to make in Swift to learn Swift, right? Like a weekend project or something. Like,
yeah. Don't get me started on app ideas I need to do on the weekend that I haven't started.
Oh, I know. I have so many goddamn ideas. I have no time.
Yeah, I still need to write. I'm sure I've talked to you about it, but it's mostly a running gag at work. Is we're using an app called Big Words, which is to put big words on your phone. And it's still not. It still only works on, like, only works. It's only optimized for 2.5-inch devices. So it looks like shit on new devices. I always think that, oh yeah, I'll work on a replacement for that app and it's going to be great and blah, blah,
and
blah.
And then you never did.
Exactly.
Which basically means you shouldn't be telling me that I should be shipping my app this fast.
Yeah, I don't have a good track record on personal stuff.
Yeah. So yeah, like, game development, it's like a thing that I haven't done and I want to explore it because I want to learn new technologies, and it worked out. I got a partner that can do the art thing, so I can actually go ahead with this project. So I'm really, like, into it. And it gives me something to be excited about other than my main app, which is, like, it's been, like, almost a year now, which is way longer than it should have been, but I don't want to burn out on it, so I need something to take my attention away a couple times. And I'm glad that this is the project that is going to be for the near future anyway.
Yeah, and if I want to not relate to something like that, but I think these days my venting ideas are more related to hardware stuff that I can just play with, like anything that has an SDK in a way.
Yeah.
I'm tinkering with the idea of buying some Philips Hues.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's the whole, like, smart lights in a way.
Yes.
And, like, I have a couple of eye beacons lying here in front of me that the battery are dead, so I need to buy new batteries and have fun with them. And yeah, so I think my venting ideas are more hardware related than, like, learning a new programming language for game development.
Which is totally fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
Exactly. Like,
okay, so, go ahead.
Yeah, like the way that I might not be that much interested in game development.
That's cool, but you have to play our game when it comes out, though.
Of course, I will.
All right, so that about wraps it up for me. I guess we should move on to the conclusion, then. We should also say that I am here until March 4th, which means that at some point in March, we will have an actual new episode.
Yeah, an actual new episode with actual real audio and real good quality audio. So I did want to make a special mention for the last episode, which was our second pilot, which was related to Yannick's decision about buying a new computer, which did not happen yet.
No, where the hell are my MacBook Pros?
Exactly, which is starting to be a common theme on that podcast. But yeah, so I do hope that you listener loved that podcast and saw the difference between what we did a year ago and why we decided to not release that stuff, because we didn't feel that prepared and that ready to launch this podcast, and now we are. during this ninth episode of this podcast.
Yeah, I would actually love it in the near future if I could do an episode on podcasting in general, because during Christmas there was like a lot of arguing on the internet about what the minimum bar for quality in podcasts is. And more recently, Jason Snell at Six Colors posted his workflow for editing podcasts, which is insane, but I actually really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I need to read that.
Well, go watch the video. The video is the most impressive part. It's a time lapse of him doing an entire episode of The Incomparable, and it's nuts.
Yeah,
it's a time lapse, and it's 17 minutes, I think.
Yeah, I think I put the link in my Insta BBQ. And also, there's still tons of podcast-related news. Also, like this week, The Verge posted an article about listening to podcasts at 1.5x, or like speaking about smart speed in Overcast, and why.
Yeah, and
bad
not
for
to
the
mention, what's it called? Inquisitive had a format change. Yeah. On Relay FM, and that has been stirring up the podcasting community recently. So there's a lot of stuff to talk about in podcasting, not to mention like Serial, which just boosted the popularity of podcasting in the last year. I think it would be interesting to expand on why podcasting is so great and our own attitude towards podcasts and all of that stuff in a future episode. I guess I should start planning those notes then.
Yeah, indeed. And I think the side message here is, even if we were a little bit in a hiatus for the last couple of weeks, we're still planning to do tons of more episodes in the near future.
Yeah, we have no shortage of topics to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. And I still need to complain about iOS.
We will never run out of things to complain about iOS. So on that note, if you want to follow us on Twitter, I'm at Sakurina. That's S-A-K-U-R-I-N-A.
And I'm Lukonush, L-U-C-C-O-N-O-U-C-H-E. You can find the show notes at limitlesspossibility.net/9.
And if you want to follow the show on Twitter, you can follow us at limipo_podcast. That's LIMIPO_podcast. And we'll see you in, actually, I don't know how long. We'll see you sometime in March.
Exactly. We'll see you in March.